It's Friday, and this is Idaho Matters. Welcome. I'm George Predis for Gemma Gaudette. It's time for our reporter roundtable. And joining us this week are Mike Sharp from KIVI 6 on Your Side Television, Kevin Richard from Idaho Ed News, Seth Ogilvie with Idaho Public Television. Gentlemen, you are serving up the buffet today.
Well, it is right, lunchtime, great. I guess.
It works.
Kevin, there's always quite a bit of news, education news in the summer, but this summer there's an extraordinary amount.
It's been kind of nonstop. Yes. Where do we want to start here?
I'd like to start with the Public Charter School Commission, which had a special session this week.
It was last Thursday, pretty interesting session. So the backstory here is that the Charter Commission had an executive session in April. They recorded it. They inadvertently released the audio, and then things really got nasty because the audio, it goes into a lot of – it's a very far-reaching executive session. They talk about administrators. They talk about Jerome's economics and student performance in Jerome. It becomes really kind of a catty ice cream social gone awry. They broke the state's open meetings law in the process. That was the determination from the Attorney General's office. So,
and how was that determination reached?
I think the Attorney General's office had their choice of reasons to ding the Charter Commission for breaking the open meetings law. I mean, it's a really damning report from the AG's office that lists several things that they did wrong. Probably the most notable was that they went way off of the subject matter that they were supposed to discuss in closed session, that they could legally discuss in closed session. They wanted to talk about student test scores that were confidential, that aren't subject to release. That you can do in an executive session, but they went way off of that subject matter, and they were behind closed doors for almost 2 hours. A deputy attorney general was there and never really tried to get them back onto the subject. So last week's meeting really only took the commission barely a minute or two to stipulate that they did violate the law. They conceded that they violated the law. They went into training with the Attorney General's office about how to behave under the open meeting law. So that part of the story feels pretty much done and dusted. But what did emerge, and I think is going to be worth watching going forward, there's a lot of bad blood right now between this Charter Commission, which oversees most of the charter schools in our state, and several of those charter schools. Came up over and over in the meeting last week. Charter officials feeling like they can't trust the commission anymore. Having heard what was said about them behind closed doors, they don't feel like they can get a fair shake from this commission. Now you have other charter schools saying, yes, the commission broke the law, learn from that, but the commission does perform a valuable role. They oversee and they ask tough questions of charter schools about student performance, about how money is being spent. So you have this rift growing between charter schools about the role of this charter commission. And it really is kind of an odd role because they do license and authorize most of the charter schools in the state. But with that comes some authority to say, how are your students doing? How are your grades? How is student growth proceeding? And how are you spending money? Yeah, how are you operating? So they do have kind of a complicated role. And right now they're not making they have made some enemies within the charter community. There's no question about that. So it will be interesting to see how that goes forward, if the commission mends fences and if there's friction and disagreement within the charter community about who oversees these charters and what kind of oversight these schools want. All at a time when more and more students are going into charter schools across the state. We're going to have 2,000 new charter school seats when the school year opens this month. That's a considerable increase.
I guess the irony of that was that mea culpa meeting also gave a microphone in the public session for opponents to voice their displeasure.
And the commission did that. They did that of their own accord. They decided to have a public comment period before they discussed the Attorney General's report. And the comments were all over the map. I mean, you had a number of charter officials saying, we don't trust you. One said, look, I'm not surprised by what I heard from the audio because I've heard that from you folks for years. You've been disdainful of this one school, Heritage Academy in Jerome, for years. This just brings it further to light. And I think there's a real disagreement right now about what is this Charter Commission supposed to do? What is their role? And how are they supposed to function?
And I think that is kind of bad timing moving into an election year because you go to the legislature. This topic's on the table. You're probably attempting to do something that, you know, looks like good politics for you if you're a legislator. And the one thing that's really popular there is charter schools. The one thing that's really unpopular there are regulations and commissions and things that impede innovation. So, I mean, as far as timing, not the best year to get involved in all this stuff with a lot of more conservative politicians looking to score points.
Right. I mean, school choice remains a very popular mantra at the State House, and that's become kind of the mantra about charter schools is that it's providing choice, it's providing options to parents. And that, I think, still remains politically popular. I think there's still a lot of support for that concept at the State House. But how do you do that, and how do you provide choice and allow for innovation in the classroom while making sure that students are being, you know, well-served and tax dollars are being wisely spent? That's the needle you're trying to thread here, and it's not an easy one to do.
Mike Sharp, KFVA. Let's talk about an exclusive report from your shop on some news at Interfaith Sanctuary and addiction recovery programs. And it ties back to a program at River of Life and a questionnaire.
Right. So it was something we talked about just last week when I was in here was a two-part story we had last week, kind of investigating what was available for LGBTQ low-income people. When they turned to the Boise Rescue Mission for their drug treatment facility, their rehab facility, there was a question on the questionnaire asking them if they were willing to live by a heterosexual lifestyle. And so it raised some concerns, and the concerns came from individuals, especially one mother that reached out to us. Her daughter had reached out for that service and had declined to move forward with it because she didn't feel comfortable answering that question. After the fact, we were contacted by Interfaith Sanctuary. They let us know that they are currently in the process of working with Allenbaugh House to build a facility that will not have those questions. There are major concerns when it comes to the accessibility of these programs for low-income people in the first place. So adding those hurdles raises extra concerns. It's a pretty expensive thing to do, especially if you're not in that 138% of poverty that Medicaid expansion will eventually reach out and assist. So if you're talking 30-day, 60-day, or 90-day treatment care facilities, it's a no-go.
I think the thing that was interesting there is they're actually talking about a new brick-and-mortar facility. I would think that Allenbaugh House could provide some of those services now, but this partnership might create this new entity.
Exactly. So they're working together to build a whole new a whole new facility that would specifically be for the people kind of left on the outside, people who can't afford these more expensive programs, people who have issues signing the waiver and signing the documents to go to the Boise Rescue Mission. And because, as I mentioned, Boise has a deficit when it comes to these types of programs, especially for low-income people, we've already had one couple reach out to us and let us know that their daughter is immediately going to be signing up. And they're very excited because they've been waiting for this opportunity for their daughter to kind of admit that she has a problem and try to tackle it. So the goal would be that this serves a population that's currently not being served.
But here we are in this conversation again of a faith-based organization that does so much heavy lifting in helping the homeless population, but indeed with certain rules, if you will, and non-denominational organizations that say, yeah, but how about these folks?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the bigger questions I think that is being asked by some of the stories we've covered. When a city and a state really depend on the charitable network to pick up the slack and take care of these people, it it enables faith-based organizations, and they have every legal right to do so, right? They can put those questions on the questionnaire. They are a faith-based organization that's trying to do some pretty incredible work that the Boise Rescue Mission does. But it does really shed light on the fact that there are people that are left out when you are asking those questions, people who cannot access programs that are really life-saving programs.
And some other people in the community actually have even higher consequences, because you have people with court-ordered treatment. You have people that is part of their probation, part of their parole, that they have to do these things. And they don't have the luxury of saying, oh, this is the only treatment thing in this area. I can't do this because of my religion or because I feel uncomfortable. They have to do it. Or they go back to prison. So those limited amount of seats in those situations are even more troubling.
Right. And we're coming off of just a couple months ago, there were 4 homeless people who died in the city of Boise in one weekend. And at least 3 of those were related to drug overdoses. This is a growing problem. It doesn't seem to be ebbing at this point with the opioid epidemic and heroin coming in, fentanyl making its presence known in Boise. These chemicals are out there, and more people are going to hopefully have access to life-saving classes.
This new entity, is this a 2020 event, or are they just now talking about raising the funds to make it happen?
It sounds like the conversations had started before our reports, but the goal would be to have it open somewhere around 2020. I don't think we have received a hard date. Like, it's not like they've broken ground and they're expected to have it open in January or February. So obviously capital campaigns are slow moving, and they're kind of just being open about it now. So we'll see how fast that moves.
It's an interesting partnership. Alibaba House obviously is funded through so many public entities, as well as local hospitals. And Interfaith Sanctuary depends so much on the community's goodwill.
Right. And I think you see that with a lot of programs in our state, where you have organizations that do receive state funds or federal funds working with purely charitable organizations to try to create, you know, stakeholders and people sitting around the table together so that some of these problems are fixed.
Much to consider in this week's Idaho Matters Roundtable, and we will continue in a moment. This is Idaho Matters on Boise State Public Radio. It's Idaho Matters on a Friday, and you're listening to Boise State Public Radio. I'm George Prentice, and we're here with Mike Sharp from KIVI and Kevin Richard from Idaho Ed News, Seth Ogilvy from Idaho Public Television. Seth, we would be remiss if we didn't have an update on the fire watch. We have a blaze very close to Bergdorf right now.
We do. I mean, we have fires kind of all over the Northwest that are kicking up, and they're probably just going to start kicking up because we're getting into that fire season. I mean, the temperatures are going up. Well, they've kind of come down a little bit, but this is generally the time of year that they go up and generally the time of year that we start seeing fires in the California, in Oregon, Washington, that just start blowing all of that smoke into Idaho. And it does have kind of a negative health effect on all of us here. Even if we're not in Bergdorf, the fires are going to affect folks in Boise. They're going to affect people in Sandpoint and Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene, because all that smoke's going to sit in the area. I was thinking about this the other day. It's interesting, during the Obama administration, there was actually deliberation on whether or not smoke should be factored into air pollution guidelines. So basically the idea is there's a certain amount of air pollution that you're allowed to put in the air in a certain area. Normally you factor in seasonal complications. So certain times of the year, certain pollution works differently. The EPA directly pulls out smoke. They don't factor that in because they say that that's not a reoccurring or planned event.
Wow.
The Obama administration was looking at it like, this is becoming a little bit more planned. This is becoming a little bit more reoccurring.
Prescribed fires are rather planned, and sometimes they keep going.
Exactly. So when you look at that data and you factor in, like, what if we put that smoke back in to the TMDLs? That's the permitting system that they use for pollution. It gets up like 5 or 6 times what's allowed the rest of the year, which gives you an idea of like how toxic a lot of this air is for us in the Northwest during fire season.
So the Nethker fire, we were told this morning, 1,100 acres, 5% contained, very close to Bergdorf, 381 firefighting personnel on the scene. This one is the real jaw dropper, the Shady Fire, which is burning in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness, 4,000 acres. And if you go onto the NCWEB website, it says estimate containment October 31st.
Wow.
Yeah, there's been a couple of fires that we've had in that area that the people pretty much from Idaho said, we're going to stop dealing with that fire when it gets into Montana. Just areas that you just can't go and fight because you're putting people at such risk.
Right.
That's why a lot of times the firefighters will tell you, you're on your own now. If you want to, you either get out or you're on your own because you took the risk when you didn't firewise your property or when you moved in this area. And they do warn people often.
And when you read this, it obviously means they're depending on the weather to change.
Exactly.
October 31st.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
When the snow starts falling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, Mother Nature is going to take care of that one.
Kevin, Boise High School, the principal there is not waiting for the school year to start to address the mascot. Let's just call it a controversy there.
Well, it's going to be a controversy if it isn't already. Boise High School has been known as the Braves now for almost a century. The principal is hoping to drop the S and go by the mascot, Boise High Brave. This is going to come up before the Boise School Board on Monday. You can sense that this is already going to be a very sensitive topic. I mean, there's a Facebook page for everything, it seems, and there's already a Facebook page opponents have put together called Save the Boise Braves. The comments on social media are all over the place on this. And you know, we've seen from recent history that this is a very sensitive issue when school boards take this up. Teton High School in Eastern Idaho dropped the Redskins mascot last month. They've already gotten a petition from critics asking them to reconsider. You have a legislator in Eastern Idaho continuing to criticize the school board for making this decision. You've had patrons up there before the vote threatening to never support a bond issue or a levy. This is very emotional stuff when you start talking about mascots. And you know, Boise High School, we're talking about a high school that has gone by this mascot for almost a century. High school has been around for a long time. I mean, there are a lot of Boise High School alums in this valley. And I suspect that if you ask, you know, a cross-section of alums, you'd get answers all over the place of saying, yes, it's time. If Native American groups are offended by this mascot, let's get rid of it. Let's be respectful. Let's get current with the times, as the principal is arguing in making the case. You know, the times have changed, and we need to try to get, you know, get current with the times. But I think you'd also hear from alums saying this is a tradition. I don't want to see it go. And I suspect that come Monday night when the board takes this up, you're going to hear all of those emotions.
And what is his explanation for Braves versus Brave?
The explanation that the district says is that Brave is more of a reflection on character, on values, as opposed to a reference to Native American culture. That by going from Braves to Brave, you get rid of what may be considered a slur. You focus on values, on And I think, you know, the hope, I suspect, is that you're going to maintain some of the traditions. I mean, you know, Boise High School's motto for years has been brave to the grave. Well, maybe you maintain that motto, even if your mascot is the Brave.
But even that's a little uncomfortable.
But I think it's complex because I sat in on a legislative council or tribal council meeting a little while back when the Braves, the Teton mascot that I'm not even going to say because that one's blatantly racist. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. There's a little bit of nuance when it comes to the Braves as opposed to the one over in Teton, which I'm not even going to address. But they were saying that there's certain elements where, and I can't remember if this was the Nimiipuu person or the Shoshone person, but they were talking about we aspire to certain things. So there's the idea of like the Cowboys or the Patriots, where it's something that we really do aspire to. And he actually brought up the Boise Braves of that's something to be aspired to. That's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. But it is still stereotypical. And I think the idea that this conversation is happening, I think, is the really good portion, that you can get to the bottom of what do we feel comfortable with. But I just want to make that differentiation because I think this one's a lot more complex than the one over in Teton.
The Shoshone Bannock tribes issued a position paper a couple of months ago. They submitted it to the State Board of Education. At the time, they were pushing for state action on several of these mascots across the state, you know, several high schools going by Indians. They do mention Boise Braves in that position paper. And the crux of it is that in the tribe's view, any of these mascots appropriate a piece of Native American culture, and it's being appropriated by, you know, a white culture. I mean, and
so almost like blackface.
I think their basic point is that this is a cultural appropriation and that it is disrespectful and that it is hurtful. So, you know, I will be very interested to see how this plays out and what the timetable is, because when this story broke about a week ago, the Idaho Statesman reported that Boise High School is hoping to make this change and start this change in the next school year, which is this month. So this feels like it's coming up very quickly. We'll see how that plays out starting Monday.
And from a technical nature, is that what they're doing, is asking permission from the board to move that forward? Is that what this is happening this coming week?
And I'm not really sure how that process would play itself out. I think the board is probably going to be asked to sign on to the idea of making this change of mascot, which, as a practical matter, would unfold over quite some time. I mean, you know, you have to change, you know, signage, you have to change uniforms, and those things are going to take some time.
I suppose someone could still play a football game, though, without a mascot.
I suppose. I mean, I think there are...
Maybe not as fun, but I suppose...
There are generic teams out there, aren't there, right?
An interesting part of the conversation were former mascots who actually were Braves for Boise High, who came out at the end of the last school year and said, you know what, no more.
It could also set up a really good journalism joke of mascot redacted.
But all that said, we're talking about a fair amount of imagery, right? And, mm-hmm. and to your point, Kevin, the expense of removing signs and logos from jerseys and et cetera, stationery for all I know.
Part of the debate now in Teton is about how much is this going to cost and who pays. The district has assured patrons up there that the cost, which could be up to $30,000 when you talk about signage and uniforms and everything, will be covered outside of taxpayer dollars. The idea is that maybe an Adidas or another corporate sponsor will come in and provide a grant to a school district because, you know, they want to support this move away from Native American imagery. But right now there's no hard and fast plan as to where that money is exactly going to come from, and that's another element of the issue in Teton.
It's a fascinating conversation to start off the new school year, and we have a new superintendent in the Boise School District. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I sat down and talked to Kobe Dennis a few weeks ago. He's a career Boise educator, and this is kind of Boise's modus operandi, to kind of grow from within, to promote from within. He is the son of a former school superintendent in Boise, Darryl Dennis. If you go to the technical center, it's the Dennis Technical Center. So he can literally walk out from his office and see a building that's named after his father. I'm sure there's no pressure attached to that. But he's a career educator, and he's a very deliberative thinker. I mean, he's, you know, he says, you know, that's something that people are going to have to get used to about me, and some may criticize me because I am a deliberative thinker. And this, you know, this is probably the first big controversial issue that's going to land on his lap as superintendent, and it's a mascot. I mean, I'm not trying to diminish it. Oh, it's just a mascot, because it means a lot to a lot of people. But this may be his introduction to the politics of running a school district in 2019.
These are interesting times for school administrators across the country. In the shadow of shootings, there has been a fair amount of second-guessing of what schools could or should do when a student who is experiencing some struggles and if a school should, quote-unquote, red flag someone. And indeed, these are conversations that a superintendent has to have now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think those conversations are definitely going on in the Valley. I talked to a lot of school resource officers and a lot of superintendents and principals over about a 2-month period last year. And the one thing that kind of kept coming up is the kids know. And as long as we have open communications, we're going to find these folks. That's assuming that it's someone internal into the school. But the kids generally, and we've seen this in a lot of these high-profile incidents, that the kids will come out later and they're like, yeah, we had a good idea that that was going to happen. And it happens on other things like just bullying, you know, like mental health issues, things like that. If you have that open dialogue with the children, you can knock off a lot of these things at the pass.
It was interesting at last week's state meeting of Idaho school administrators how many items on the agenda had to do with school safety.
I think it's the tenor of the times, and I think it's also a reflection of the fact that the state hasn't really come up with a plan, a statewide plan in terms of training, in terms of facilities. I know that's something State Superintendent Ibarra has been pushing for with very little success. It's not that the state is doing nothing. The state has been doing risk assessments at the schools. They've gone out to every school, or that's their plan, was to get out to every school by this summer to look at what's the state of these schools. I mean, what kind of security measures are in place? What sort of passive security, active security? And I'll tell you, as a reporter who covers education, who goes into schools, it is all over the map. I mean, there was a time a few years ago I walked into a high school and I wanted somebody to flag me down. I was there, you know, with all good intentions, but I just walked in a door and I was walking down a hallway. And I was like, please, somebody accost me. Ask me what I'm doing here because I'm from out of town. And
so many of the old schools have the school offices in the middle of the school.
Exactly. And you have to walk past a whole bunch of classrooms and some of these.
Yeah. But that being said, you can't solve this problem with technology or with building, because I went to some of the most secure schools, the ones that are held up as a model. They have cameras everywhere. Kids will open a door for you. I mean, kids are just nice. Kids aren't thinking that way, and they'll occasionally just be like, oh, this guy needs to come in.
Until
something bad happens.
Okay, gentlemen, let's lighten this up. Here's the speed round. What cabinet secretary will be visiting Idaho this coming Monday?
Ben Carson.
Okay, yes. Secretary of?
HUD.
Very good. Sometime this weekend, Bogus Basin expects the 100th customer will ride Bogus Basin in the summer. Mountain coaster.
That thing.
Lucky person will get
I didn't
a ski
know
pass.
There was a roller coaster up there.
Exactly. University of Idaho's big announcement this week was?
Athletic director. The first female athletic director.
Can I say probably about time after recent
years? Yeah, considering what they endured with the last one. This seems like a perfect time.
What iconic, she has plenty to do.
Mm-hmm. My goodness, yeah. Yes. And what iconic figure turned 75 years old today?
Smokey Bear.
Very good.
I thought you were announcing your age.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. That is in my rearview mirror, my friend.
This will be Seth's last appearance on Idaho Matters.
Bye, everybody.
And on that note, the bar is open. Gentlemen, thank you so very much. Mike Sharp, Kevin Richard, Seth Ogilvy, always a pleasure. And here's the good news. Gemma Gaudette returns next week. But before then, we have more of Idaho Matters on a Friday.